This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's been a couple of days, maybe a week, I guess, since we talked about the debt limit mishigas, because we promised you we weren't going to do every twist and turn of that story. But it's complicated, the debt limit story. Not so much the politics of it, but the economics and the finance of it. So given the longstanding belief on this program that context matters, there is a crucial piece of context you ought to know as this debt limit fight plays out. First, though, a reminder on the size of the federal debt.
It's pretty big. It's the biggest it's been in history.
Currently stands around $31.4 trillion.
That's Kaylin Birch, global economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit in London. Libby Cantrill, she's head of public policy for PIMCO, the big investment management firm. That $31.4 trillion gross debt is the number everybody's been talking about, because that's the debt ceiling, the limit the Congress will have to raise for the government to keep paying its bills. Bills that, as you've surely been told a bunch of times by now, here and elsewhere, that Congress has already run up. What we're going to talk about today is the composition of that gross debt.
So essentially, there are two pieces of that debt puzzle.
Kaylin Birch again, she's at the EIU.
And the biggest and most important is federal debt that's held by the public.
Debt held by the public is basically U.S. Treasuries, IOUs from Uncle Sam, held by banks, other countries, regular people like you and me, most often through mutual funds or pension plans or some other kind of retirement plan. That piece of the puzzle, debt held by the public, makes up almost 80% of the total debt. That's 80% of $31.4 trillion. Let me do the math. About $25 trillion.
The second part of the debt puzzle is debt effectively that is owed within the government to other agencies.
That's what's technically called intragovernmental holdings. Yes, a mouthful, but an important distinction. Money that one part of the government owes to another part. It is about 20% of the total, $6 trillion, give or take.
It's like the right hand lending to the left.
Or put another way,
it's as if I lent some money to my husband. Now he has more money, I have less. But as a household, the same value is in place.
Now, you may well ask, why and how could the federal government owe money to itself, so to speak?
It's usually things like Social Security or other public services collect more in revenue than they necessarily need in a year. That surplus revenue is then invested in treasuries.
Just like a private pension fund or a bank might want to park money in government bonds to earn a little return, agencies like the Social Security Administration or Medicare like to put their extra cash in treasuries, too.
They need it to be as safe as possible.
That's Libby Cantrill at PIMCO.
U.S. treasuries, at least historically, have fit that bill. And as a result, the U.S. Treasury owes them money.
At least historically, in what Libby said there, that's doing a lot of work in that sentence, because the American government has so far always paid its debts on time. That's why all those institutions and government agencies and literally most of the rest of the planet invests in U.S. Treasury bonds. It's that whole full faith and credit of the United States thing that we talk about a lot. And so the people and the banks and the institutions and the businesses here and overseas to whom we owe the $25 trillion of our debt held by the public are keeping a real nervous eye on Republicans in the House of Representatives.